This is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi. I'm sitting here with Travis. And today we're going to be talking about families that are crazy or dysfunctional. You can make the choice on that one. There are some really great stories within the scripture. One of my favorite books of the Bible is Genesis. You learn about sin, you learn about the fall of man, but then you have just these family dynamics that are going off in that thing that are just wild and crazy. You have stories of like Noah and the great flood. You have Abraham about to kill his own kid. You have Isaac.
Cain and Abel.
You have Cain and Abel. You just have these incredibly bizarre stories that are all connected into that and connected from the very beginning. And what's interesting is there's a story of a guy that lives basically his whole life out of his homeland in a different place that gets more ink than almost all of them do. And his name is Joseph. We know him as the guy with the coat of many colors. But his family was, it was jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
His daddy is Jacob, and Jacob has multiple wives. I think two wives, actually, but then he has concubines, which I don't really understand what that exactly means. It means they don't have all the rights, I think, but they have these concubines. But his first wife that his dad gets, has to stay like 7 years with his uncle and work his farm. And then the uncle tricks him, and he gets old sleepy eye. I think that's what what does it say in the Bible? It says like her eyes were lazy or something like that. She had like a lazy eye.
Yeah, it was something like she wasn't one to look at. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and but he'd already made the vows. He consummated the marriage, and so he had to take her. And then he had to wait a little bit, and then he got his wife that he really wanted, the younger daughter. Her name was Rachel. And Rachel, then he had to work another 7 years. But the family kind of prospers during this time. And yet Rachel doesn't have any kids. And Leah does. And she has all these sons. And then there's concubines in there. And they're having kids. And it's just like this mess to try to track. And Rachel is barren. She's infertile at that point. And there's one point where she buys her sister's mandrakes, which was some type of fertility.
Yeah, it was like some kind of onion thing or something.
It had to do with fertility somehow. And she gets pregnant and she has Joseph. And Joseph is Jacob's favorite. He's his guy. He's his kid. And he is number 11 of 12. There's one, he does have another brother later on. His name is Benjamin, but he's one of 11 kids, and he's clearly his dad's favorite, and he gets the coat of many colors.
Yeah, this is like a real life soap opera story, which is pretty incredible, but yeah, so his dad gives him this coat and he starts talking smack to his brothers a little bit, which is, if you've got brothers and you're the little one of the family, that's never usually a good idea. I mean, I grew up the oldest of three boys, and when my younger brothers would talk smack like that, somebody was getting a whooping. And so he's out in I think they're tending their flocks at this point, and he tells his brothers that he had these crazy dreams about this stuff. And
yeah, like they're bowing down to him.
Yeah, never a good idea to share that with your brothers.
Yeah, even his parents are bowing down to him. And his dad, I think, at that moment gets a little bit like, what in the world's wrong with this boy? Kid? Did I take him out to the woodshed?
Yeah. And so they're continuing on after that, and they're out with their flocks, and the brothers start to plot against him. And they're like, we're going to get rid of this dreamer. And so they scheme this plan, right? And they want to kill him. And then which brother is it that says, like, no, we shouldn't kill him. That's taking it too far. One of his brothers at least had some sense. And so they're like, okay, we won't kill him. We're going to just take his jacket. We're going to pull a jacket jacking move here, put some blood on it, kill an animal, put some blood on it, chuck him in a well, a cistern, and then we're going to sell him. That's messed up.
Well, to think about, like, where are you at in your family relationship?
Oh, yeah.
That you're that in that place where you're selling your own brother. And there had to be some crazy conversations that were happening. We get like a little glimpse of that. But I was just thinking about in our own family structures, we all have some dysfunction.
Yeah.
We all have some things that are just messed up. And whether it be family sins or just, you know, personality types or favoritism or whatever. And so we can kind of relate to the story at some level. And yet, in this story, I'm not sure I can relate to the idea of selling my sister. That'd be kind of weird.
it's a little overboard.
A little overboard, yeah. And yet, in the passage, they sell him, and he goes, and he's on this caravan, and he goes to Egypt.
Well, even before that, they strip him of his jacket, chuck him in the cistern, and then they're sit down and eat lunch. Like, we gotta talk about this, fellas. And then that's when the caravan comes by, and they're like, oh, we'll just sell him to these dudes.
Yeah, I think they put him in the cistern because the older brother was supposed to come back because he knew it was gonna. And I think he was actually plotting to get a little bit more favor in dad's eyes.
Be the rescuer.
He'd be the rescuer. And then the other brothers came up with the idea, let's just sell him. And so they sell him off and he goes to Egypt. And there is just this picture of family division and violence in this.
Yeah.
And it's really reminiscent of Cain and Abel. And if you know the story of Cain and Abel, one of them kills the other one. And because of their relationship or lack thereof, a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this picture of this family division and violence that's in and through this story. And it's reminiscent of it. There's also this threat to the promise of God that's in there. And the promise of God goes back to his great-great-grandfather, Abraham.
Yep.
And Abraham had a promise that God made to him that his out of his family, basically, there would be a great nation and there would be so many descendants that not even the sand and the seashore could count all of them. So there's going to be this incredible nation that is built upon that, but it had to come out of this next generation, and this is the generation of these 12.
Yeah, and so Joseph, some cool things happen. Like if you're watching this or listening to this as like a soap opera story unfolding, like this is the pinnacle of just the demise of Joseph. He's sold off to these slave traders, and you think that that's the end of him, but there's a famous verse that Joseph said later on, and we'll get to that in the story, but things start to turn around a little bit for Joseph. It wasn't all like that's the end of his story. How does he get into favor with Pharaoh? Oh, he interprets the dreams, right?
Yeah, but before that even, there is kind of a blessing of him as he gets there. And he gets sold into Potiphar's house, which he was a steward of his house. And God begins to bless Potiphar and for the sake of Joseph, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this, just kind of this picture of, and maybe even reminiscent of what the nation of Israel was going to do. It was supposed to be a blessing to other nations. And in that picture, Joseph is a part of the nation of Israel. It's very small at that point. But he's a part of that. And he's already beginning to do that.
And so he's working for Potiphar, and Potiphar puts him in charge of basically his affairs of his estate, right?
Yep.
And Joseph, what is it? It says he's a striking young fella.
Yep.
To paraphrase a little bit. And Potiphar's wife isn't that great of a wife in the story. And so she keeps trying to convince Joseph to
lie with her.
Yeah, hang out with her. That would be offensive to her husband. It would be, yeah, not a good situation. And Joseph has some moral character in that. He stands up to that. He actually ends up running out of the house so fast because she tries to seduce him and capture him, so to speak. And he leaves his jacket behind. And so then she schemes up this big ordeal about how Joseph tried to attack her. And then Potiphar's like, well, I guess I kind of believe my wife, and he gets chucked into prison then at that point. So it goes from slightly better, and then he's back into a hole essentially again.
Yeah, and he's there for a while. And then there's like a baker and a wine taster cupbearer. He would taste the wine to make sure that it wasn't going to poison the king. And they both have dreams, and he was able to interpret the dreams. One was not so good. One was that the Pharaoh was going to come and cut off one of the guys that had the dream's head, and the other one would be set free. And he interpreted those correctly. Well, then they forgot about him, and he's there for another chunk of time in prison, just chilling like a villain. And yet he's just going about his duties, doing his thing, and people, I think, enjoyed him being there. He was a blessing in prison. And so then Pharaoh has this really crazy dream, and he brings in everybody he has. He brings all the PhDs and all the wise people.
And all the witch doctors.
All the witch doctors. He brought in anybody he could. And no one could solve what he was. No one could give him a clear interpretation of the dream. And then Joseph, it was the baker, right? The baker lived? Or did the baker die? I don't know if it matters, but let's...
The baker died, yeah.
The baker died, and so the cupbearer goes, I got a guy that I know. He interpreted this dream for me, and he gets Joseph in front of Pharaoh, and God helps Joseph to interpret the dream. Well, it's true. There's going to be 7 years of blessing and 7 years of famine, and in the midst of this, because he does this, Pharaoh then puts Joseph in charge of, he's second in command over the whole nation.
Yeah.
In what's
straight out of jail.
Straight out of jail. He's the one who's taking care of stockpiling for Egypt, and he's stockpiling, you know, so they have food during this famine. And his forecasting puts Joseph in the Egyptian court. Which is interesting because that's what he was dreaming about. Like his brothers, it's the kingship type idea, the promise of this future that was coming, that dream that he had. He probably shouldn't have been taunting his brothers with that. But I don't think he could have even imagined what God was going to do or how God was going to get him there. And I think that's really one of the things that's interesting. Sometimes we think we understand something of God. God has a promise for us, but we don't always understand how that's going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is one of the things that's so fascinating to me in this story, is that Joseph didn't understand how it was going to play out. And yet he was kind of holding on to that whole thing. Joseph's dream anticipated his royal position. Even his coat of many colors was a kind of a royal garb. And so at the beginning of Genesis 37, readers have this awaited prophetic covenant promise that there is this arrival of a royal seed through the line of Abraham. And in the opening verses of this, you have this anticipation of Joseph being that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the coat is kind of a premonition about what he is to become. And so he's got this system in place. They start stockpiling grain and food because they knew that the famine was going to come. And I mean, they had to build extra storehouses and stuff for this. So like, it was really a blessing of God to prepare them for this. And so eventually the famine strikes, and you know, the whole area is affected by this famine. And so Jacob sends the remaining sons to go out and buy grain from Joseph, is who it ends up being. And he keeps the youngest one there with him. And so they start on the journey, and they get there, and they're like, we're here to buy food. And Joseph accuses them of being spies and kind of holds them captive for a few days. And he finally lets them buy the grain, right? And he's like, okay, you guys go back. I want you to bring your younger brother back, though, this time. And so is this when he packs their silver? He has his servants pack the silver up.
Yeah, he wanted to make sure there's a guarantee or something that they'd come back.
So there's a little bit of a kind of – it's a slight jab back at his brothers. You know, he's not an angel.
I'm not sure he trusts them.
Right, exactly. And I wouldn't either.
They haven't proven themselves to be trustworthy.
Right. And so they go back, And they realize that they've got their money with them that had been returned. So now they're even more afraid. They were afraid to go and talk to the leaders of Egypt to begin with. And so once they get home, they tell their dad, Jacob, all that had happened. And they need the youngest one to come. And their dad is kind of sweating that one. He's like, I don't know about this. You know, this could be bad news and I'd lose another son. I already lost my favorite one. Now I'm going to lose my baby boy.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this story is his family's going to starve. Remember the Abrahamic covenant that God had made. And the story is, I think, probably less about Joseph and this weird family and more about God fulfilling his promises.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it through a slave boy. He does it through somebody who wasn't even Egyptian. And he puts him into the second place in all of the world at that time, which is so incredible that God can do that, that God could work in such mm-hmm. a way. And he, part of it is he was going to continue to fulfill his promise that he promised to Abraham. And that's one of the things, as you read that story, you think it's about Joseph, but it's really about God
mm-hmm.
and about God's faithfulness and about what God can do. If he has promised it to you, you can count on it. And I think he was protecting the nation at that point. And he was blessing the other nations around, because without Joseph and without God interpreting that dream and giving him the knowledge, what would happen to Egypt?
Yeah, they'd just be wiped out.
Right. Like if you had, you know, it's kind of like if you had just a pile of money and you just kind of think it's kind of like an NFL contract, right? And it goes for 7 years and you're just spending money, putting new mansions, getting your, you know, all of your electric cars and all of your gas cars that you want and all of this other stuff, because you think it's going to go on forever. And then all of a sudden everything is cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they would have understood that. I don't think they would have. And I think it would have not only killed Egypt, it would have killed a lot of other people. And it was God's providence using the people that he chose, using the chosen seed to do that. And just, it's an incredible story of Joseph in a dysfunctional family, but it's actually more incredible, a story about God.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of paints a picture of pointing towards Jesus too. I mean, this guy comes out of nowhere. It's seemingly just the lowly of lows. He's not even, like you said, part of the Egyptian culture, family line. And the system that he puts in place, the warning that he gives the people that's in place, they're able to store up all this grain and provide for the people to sustain life during that 7-year famine. Obviously, Jesus sustains life for eternity, but, you know, it paints that picture, points towards the story of
Jesus.
Well,
yeah, he's a Messiah. He's an anointed one.
Yeah.
He's a, you know, in theology, he's a prototype.
Mm-hmm.
He's a type of Christ. And Joseph is a favored son. Is that ringing any bells to you people that know the gospel, that God gave his one and only son? Joseph is a favored son, rejected by his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, through faithfulness and suffering, ascends to the highest throne in the world. Remember, he was a slave boy who was imprisoned. He was never getting out of that. And God used that in Joseph's life and moved him there. And there's just so many different similarities between what Genesis says about Joseph and this blessing that Christ does for us. And it's interesting, Genesis itself suggests that Joseph is a type in Jacob's blessing of Judah. He says, Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's son shall bow down before you. And that's in Genesis 49:8. Jacob depicts the coming king from Judah with imagery that closely resembles Joseph's narrative. And Joseph's brothers will praise and even bow down before him. And so this is just an incredible story of God's reconciliation. And so what happens in the story is finally Joseph tells his brothers, they're coming in, and he tells his brothers, hey, I'm Joseph, I'm your brother. And he's kind of crying about it, and they're weeping about it, and they're super scared still. Because they think, yeah, they think he's going to retaliate. And yet he restores them, restores the family through forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And he forgives them. And he says the famous line at the end, which is,
"You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good."
And there's this, again, that thread of God's sovereignty and providence that's through that. What God, they meant for evil, God meant for good. And God protected the nation of Israel. So he brings the whole family there. And they're in the land of Goshen, I think is where they're suited. And they start to multiply, which is the Abrahamic covenant, mm-hmm. which is the Adam or Adamic covenant also, to go and be fruitful and to multiply and fill the earth. And so there's this incredible protection that God provides in the midst of this. And it's through Joseph, and it's this prototype of what Christ did for us.
Yeah. And you see, like you said, God's faithfulness. It's a beautiful picture of God's faithfulness in that he doesn't forsake Joseph. He doesn't forsake the Israelite tribe. Even in the midst of their suffering, he was still there providing for them. I think it's in chapter 39, in a few verses, it keeps saying that the Lord was with Joseph. And you look at all of these circumstances that he found himself surrounded in, all the stuff that was happening to him. You know, he was left for dead, but God, and sold into slavery, but God was faithful to him in all of the stuff that was meant really for evil. His brothers had no good intentions in that at all, other than to get rid of him and become at least a better loved son of their dad's. And everything, all of it turned around, and Joseph was able to see God work in that through good for himself, for good through his family, for good through the people throughout Egypt as they were able to survive that famine.
Yeah, Joseph's story is a story of the whole Bible. It's a story of glory through suffering and through humiliation that someone achieves or moves through and produces somehow this reconciliation. So if you're connected to a crazy family, have hope. But the greatest crazy family to be connected to is the family of God. And if you're connected to what Jesus has done for you on the cross, his death, burial, and resurrection, you're connected to him. And if you've said yes to the real Jesus, the real, not the prototype of Joseph, but the real Jesus and what he's done and offered the forgiveness that we need, there is this incredible story. Because God's story plus our story, it doesn't matter if your name is Joseph or Jimmy or Johnny or Karen or whatever it is. If your story is connected to God's story, it's always a great story. It was true for Joseph, and it's true for us. That's good news you can use.
Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. If you enjoyed what we chatted about today, or you've got some questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me, travis@evangelup.org. Or if you'd like to catch up on previous episodes of our Pearls and Swine podcast, you can find us on your Apple or Google or wherever device you like to find your podcasts on. Just search Evangel Houghton and find us there, or you can go to our website, evangelup.org.